dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And boy, is the battle space hotting up at the moment. And to address what is going on in some of its hottest fronts, I'm delighted to say we've got Christian Whiten with us. Christian is, of course, a former senior official in the George W. Bush State Department. You see him frequently at Fox News and his writings in myriad outlets. He is currently a principal at DC International Advisory LLC and the author of a forthcoming and very timely book, Smart Power: Between Diplomacy and War. Christian, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here.
It's especially good to have you with us to try to make sense of what is happening at the moment in Egypt. It seems safe to say that developments there are now moving closer and closer in the direction of full-scale civil war. But is that how you see it? And if so, why is that coming to pass?
Well, the most recent thing, of course, is the Muslim Brotherhood being displaced from these large protest camps that they had taken up demanding the return of their Islamist President Morsi. You know, they were warned by the military, by the authorities, to clear out, and they didn't. Now, it does look like the Egyptian military may have used a heavy hand in some instances. There are over 100 people dead, but I think it's important to keep in mind that the Brotherhood, of course, is the political force in Egypt that is most likely to use force itself, to use violence itself. So it's a chaotic situation. It's one we're not helping at all. You know, the president, or rather, I don't believe the president said anything. He's golfing in Massachusetts, but John Kerry came out, issued sort of a bland, we hope there's going to be stability. But still, we've never really made clear what the political objective ought to be in Egypt, and it certainly, in my mind, should not be empowering the Islamists or facilitating their return to power.
Yeah. Well, Christian, that's kind of what I wanted to get at as part of the backdrop to this story, of course, which is, what role has the United States government played to date in empowering the Muslim Brotherhood and enabling it to get to the point where it was exerting clearly a very repressive, totalitarian, even Sharia agenda, or aspired to at the very least?
Right. It came earliest, I believe, from Hillary Clinton, actually in the State Department, although the National Security Council was in there for good measure. But meetings very early on after Mubarak went away with the Brotherhood, and the State Department came out and said they were low level and infrequent, which is a sure sign that they were high level and persistent. you had also Inspector of John McCain and Lindsey Graham going over and saying, oh, wow, you know, these Muslim Brotherhood guys aren't so bad. We should definitely be working with them, and they should have a role in government. I mean, these are people who are committed not to democracy, but to theocracy, really. I mean, they're Islamists. They want to unify mosque and state. So this is quite remarkable that we have sort of all sides of the Washington foreign policy establishment not supporting the secularists, and the secularists were a bit of a mess, but they always are in the wake of a repressive era. But, we were out there supporting the wrong guys.
Yeah. I think, actually, this predates those conversations. If I'm not mistaken, Christian Whiten, President Obama insisted that Muslim Brotherhood personnel be present at his first Muslim outreach speech, the one that he did, as I recall, back in, I think it was May of 2009 in Cairo, Cairo University. And from that point forward, it was absolutely transparent that he was committed to helping the Brotherhood assert itself and become more and more a force in Egyptian politics. Which brings us to your last point, the bipartisan character, I think of it as kind of Obamacane, effort to try to empower and perhaps restore to power, for that matter, the Muslim Brotherhood is simply madness. What kind of policy would you recommend going forward as we look at Egypt, given that there may well be more bloodshed at the hands most immediately of the military and the government?
Well, the worst thing I think they can do is rush into early elections where once again the Brotherhood is going to be the best organized and perhaps the most motivated, although they did such a bad job governing, they really have alienated a lot of Egypt. But the more secular forces, more modern forces, more liberal, whatever you want to call them, still aren't terribly organized. And the person who was a more visible secularist is Mohamed El-Baradei, who had a role as deputy prime minister in this last government. He resigned. Now, he's a bit of a questionable figure. He spent most of his career at the UN. I'm certain that the secular movement can survive without him there. But you know, these are also people who, after the revolution, made the rounds in Congress and were very unimpressive. Staffers are telling me they were saying things to the secular group, saying, well, we really need to put the military on trial and focus on punishing those who were involved in governing Europe, governing Egypt from the military during that time. And, you know, they're just not a lot of clarity. So they need help, but it's going to take a long time. And in the meantime, I think we just have to support the military as much as possible.
Yeah, I very much agree. Let me ask you about Syria. This was the front burner issue until very recently. It now has been clearly relegated to something further back. Should we, especially knowing what we now all know about the Muslim Brotherhood, many of us knew it before, but it's now transparent what they're about and the danger they represent, not just to Egypt, but to, I think, our interests more broadly, perhaps even to our own country, since they are bent on destroying Western civilization from within, as you know, Christian Whiten. But what about Syria? Is this now something that we should rethink what President Obama seemed bent on, which was bringing the Muslim Brotherhood to power there?
Well, I think there it's regrettable because this would have been a lot easier, I think, to influence 2 years ago when this began, more than 2 years ago. It's sort of starting to resemble the Spanish Civil War from the late 30s, where both sides were frankly loathsome. There was your choice between the communists who were clearly being controlled by Stalin from Moscow or the fascists who were close with Hitler. You know, your choice now it seems to be Assad and not a secularist opposition, but an al-Qaeda and Muslim Brotherhood-influenced opposition. My hope is that at least some of that opposition, especially defectors from Assad's army, might actually be more secular, and hopefully our CIA could get in there or other agencies and figure out who they are and support them. But this is just so unlikely because they're not being given clarity from the White House. We have a White House that still thinks, and frankly, a McCain-Graham clique in the Senate that still thinks if you can bring the Muslim Brotherhood into government, if you can bring the Islamists in, then they'll be invested in democracy and they'll be a helpful force. And this has been proven in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Egypt, in Iraq. The list goes on, but they're still at it.
Yeah, well, it's they're committed to democracy as long as it brings them to power, and then they'll be pretty much committed to getting rid of it, I think. Christian Whiten, again, is our guest. He is with D.C. International Advisory. He is also the author of a forthcoming book in September, Smart Power. We look forward to talking more about that when it's available, Christian. But just to close out on the Middle East at the moment, of course, John Kerry, of whom you spoke a moment ago, has invested massively since he became the Secretary of State in trying to get the so-called peace process between the Palestinians and Israelis restarted. Final status negotiations have now begun this week. It is hard to argue that this is the most important issue in the Middle East, yet that seems to be the preoccupation he has had. Where is this going to go, Christian? Anywhere useful? And specifically, if you could, talk a little bit about the requirement that preceded these talks, namely Israel's release of another 100 or so of the jihadists they had in their jails.
Well, this is another part of progressive doctrine that if you resolve Israel-Palestine, then you solve all or at least most of the problems in the Middle East, that a lot of terrorism and acrimony and violence comes from this unsolved dispute. I don't believe that. And I don't think there's any evidence of that. And so if you look now, basically, John Kerry is the one who's brought this up. Neither the Israelis or the Palestinians were terribly eager to get to the negotiating table because factors, frankly, haven't changed since the several times this has failed before, last time failing under Condi Rice and her desultory gathering at the Naval Academy in Annapolis. So we twisted their arm. They released, I believe, more than 100, 109, something like that, very bad people involved in terrorism. And now there are talks. Kerry has imposed an arbitrary 9-month deadline. You know, one of the big problems of several is that not all the parties are at the table. Hamas runs Gaza. Hamas is not at the table. And so any agreement would have to be imposed on them, and they're not going to go quietly into the night. I mean, so who invades?
Couldn't agree more. We're going to have to visit more about this, though, at length on another occasion. Christian Wyden, thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the great work at DC International Advisory, and come back to us again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Ron Packard of K-12 about the challenge to our military, to perhaps the all-volunteer force itself, taking place in our military schools. That and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Ron Packard, a man I have not met before, but I'm very pleased to do so at this moment. He is the CEO of K-12, an organization that we'll hear more about in a moment, involved in the business of what he calls in a new book, education transformation, and of particular interest is the need for such transformation in military schools, a subject about which he knows something as he was on the Defense Education Advisory Board. Ron Packard, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about your company and what you do.
Absolutely. K-12 is a company I had founded 13 years ago. And the idea would be that through the internet, you could deliver a world-class education to any child on the globe. So it would no longer matter where you lived. If you had access to the internet, you could get an education. So we now operate both public and private online virtual schools where kids can either go full-time and do their entire education online in an accredited school, or they can take individual courses to supplement what they're currently doing. We've grown from, a startup in 13 years ago to now we have 130,000 children going to us full-time from 85 different countries and hundreds of thousands of more using us in classrooms around the country.
So let me make sure I'm clear about this. You can do it independent of brick-and-mortar schools, or you can do it within those schools. Is that right?
Absolutely right. When you're doing within the schools, usually they're just taking one or two courses. It might be you want to take Chinese and it's not offered in your brick-and-mortar school, so we can offer Chinese with an accredited teacher. But there are lots of children for various reasons who decide to go full-time online to school, and they do it primarily from their home or their locations, and they can go full-time and get an accredited degree. It's fantastic.
Well, it is fantastic, especially given what is facing those whose children are in military schools between the frequent moves that their parents are obliged to make as a result of military service. We're visiting with Ron Packard. He is the CEO of K-12, Inc. It is an organization committed to providing quality education to those who may not be able to get it through normal means. And this is a particular problem, Ron, as I understand it, with those in the military on a good day because of the frequent relocations that they and their children have to undergo. Talk a little bit about that, the unique problems that the military schools are facing, and then what kind of impact they're now confronting as a result of budget cuts.
Absolutely. So the military children, they usually tend to move every 3 years, and that creates an issue for any child when you're moving that much. There's lots of studies that show that schools and students that have high mobility end up not doing as well, and there's lots of reasons for it, but what's happening with the military particularly is they may go overseas and be in DODEA schools, which generally do a very good job, but then they come back and all of a sudden they're in California, and then they're in Texas, and then they're in Virginia. And because, the states teach different things at different grade levels, they end up getting gaps in their curriculum and their learning. And they also have the notable effects associated with what happens when children move. So the military has a pretty unique problem. One of the great things about what online schools do is you can have one education that follows you the entire time. So you don't have to worry about those curricular gaps. The student can stay doing the same program, curriculum content from kindergarten through 12th grade. So we see a lot of military families enrolling in these types of programs for exactly the reasons I just mentioned earlier. We also now have lots of groups that get together in co-ops on military bases in the States and do this together. So it's a pretty powerful option that helps solve a lot of the problems associated with those frequent moves. And with the sequestration, the effect on, both the impact aid and DODEA schools, I think, it's harder to deliver the same type of education they've been delivering. So this may become a more attractive option with the sequestration.
Just to give people who may not be familiar with this set of challenges that face our military personnel, there are something on the order of 89,000 students attending 1,300 or so DOD schools, and those schools are being subjected as a result of the budget cuts to something on the order of a $60 million cut per year. That has got to affect the quality of education that these kids would be getting. I'm told that they are furloughing teachers and therefore cutting back on school days as well. Give us a sense, Ron, of what this means to the average student and of course to their parents who are concerned about the quality of education they're getting in the DOD environment.
Well, clearly it's going to be, you know, have an adverse effect, because usually what ends up happening is, at least when schools have budget cuts, they end up certainly cutting extracurriculars and cutting on the fringe. You end up having, you know, fewer teachers and more kids. So directionally, you know, it ends up being the experience, you know, by definition isn't as good. And I think the exact magnitude of how it's going to implement, it's hard to answer what actually happens, but it clearly is not helpful, right? We can say that.
Yeah. And to the extent that one of those extracurriculars or fringe items, if you will, is counseling for kids who may be having a hard time as a result of getting ripped up by the roots every couple of years, as you say, and having to make friends all over and fit into a very different school environment, that's got to be a real challenge. Talk, if you would, just a moment about how the core curriculum and homeschooling issues fit into the work that you're doing, Ron Packard, at K-12.
Well, really, the core curriculum is done, you know, for all the families. So really, it's designed to align with the most rigorous of all 50 state standards and soon to be Common Core standards. And really, what way to think about virtual schooling is it's really closer to public schooling, but it's public schooling at home, where you can do it anywhere, anytime, any place. So you take the great elements of public school, which is, you know, good curriculum, good teachers, and you combine it with some of the flexibility you have with homeschooling and the continuity, and you get a pretty powerful option. You also get the accreditation that of being in a public school that's completely accredited. And when you're in the states, if you're in the 32 states where we have now, you know, public schools, it's free to the family. So you get the teachers, the internet connection, all the materials, all for free to the family. And fortunately, that's available in a lot of the big military deployment states like California, Texas, Virginia. So we have it in a lot of those states. So it's a great option for these families to pursue. So the way we always think about it is public schooling with all the rigor, accountability, great teachers, but you can do it at home.
And it does conform to the core curriculum. Is that what I hear you saying?
It does. And, you know, that the Common Core has not implemented officially anywhere yet, but our curriculum now aligns pretty well to it. And when Common Core becomes commonplace, for lack of, we'll fully align to it.
Well, this is a subject perhaps for another day's conversation, because I know there's a lot of concern about the Common Core or core curriculum being promoted by the government. But let me just close with this, Ron Packard, again, CEO of K-12 Inc. And author of Education Transformation. We spend a lot of time on this program talking about challenges to the all-volunteer force, which is, of course, what makes up the military we have today, the only military we have today, I might add. To the extent that parents in uniform are concerned about the quality of their kids' education, and absent this kind of alternative that you've proposed through K-12 Inc., this must be an additional challenge to retention, is it not?
It clearly is. You know, when I was on the Department of Defense Education Advisory Board and I visited lots of families on military bases, education was critically important. And, you know, when families feel they're not getting that, they are more likely to leave the service. So I don't think there's any doubt about that, because family is what matters. So I think the fact that the more that we can provide the options to keep these families happy and feeling their kids are getting well educated, the better it'll be for the retention in the services. And I'll also say, when I visit base, I'm amazed at what these families go through. You know, you have kids, parents deployed in Afghanistan, Iraq for, you know, years, and they're doing that with mobility. If you don't have peace at the family, it's got to be hard to do that.
Absolutely right. Ron Packard, thank you for what you're doing for the country, and most especially for our men and women in uniform and their kids. Keep up the good work. Please come back to us, and let's talk about that core curriculum at some point soon. Next up, we'll be talking with Bill Gertz. Bill Gertz joins us to talk about Egypt, China, and you, and much more. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey. Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 10 years ago this week, a tree branch fell on a power line in upstate New York, and up to 55 million people in North America had no electricity for several days. If something that grave could happen by accident, what would be the repercussions if someone deliberately set out to take down the nation's grid? The frightening truth is that an enemy could inflict catastrophic harm by detonating perhaps just a single nuclear weapon high above our country and unleashing what is known as electromagnetic pulse, or EMP. But even in the absence of such an attack, intense solar flaring like that going on now could have a similar effect. Hats off to the Heritage Foundation for marking this anniversary with National EMP Awareness Day. Find out more at stopemp.org. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by Bill Gertz. He is one of the preeminent national security reporters in the United States today. He writes for the Washington Free Beacon, where he is a senior editor, and also for Washington Times. His indispensable Inside the Ring column is a source of much of what we talk about here each week. Bill, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Much is happening in Egypt at the moment, Bill. What are you making of the developments on the ground there and what it might mean both for Egypt and for the United States?
I had a very important piece today in the Free Beacon that discusses a debate that has broken out inside the U.S. Government intelligence and policy community that says that the Obama administration's backing of the Muslim Brotherhood has driven the Egyptian military to seek a new alliance, probably with Russia and perhaps even with China. We're seeing the unraveling of the situation there as the Muslim Brotherhood is opposing the military interim government, and it's a mess. I mean, we've got hundreds dead, and it's clear that this is the Muslim Brotherhood had been preparing for this. There had been reports prior to the takeover in late June that the Muslim Brotherhood was setting up militias that it planned to use in just such an eventuality if the military were to turn on the Morsi government.
Well, it certainly was consistent with their sort of revolutionary character. And I think, in fact, what we're going to watch play out there, Bill Gertz, is a lot more of this before it's over. Bill, you have also been reporting recently about further developments in terms of the nuclear threat from communist China. Talk to us a little bit about that and what it suggests is their intention.
Yeah, I had another important story which revealed that on July 24th, the Chinese conducted a test, the third test in the past year, of a new road mobile intercontinental ballistic missile called the DF-31A. This is a missile that can carry 1 to 5 warheads and can reach the United States. It has a range of about 6,400 miles and represents a new threat. The missile test was carried out in complete secrecy and keeping with the Chinese refusal to make public any details of their nuclear program. And it was also kept secret by the Pentagon, which refused to discuss any details. They don't want to highlight the threat from China, as they have a policy of trying to engage the Chinese military in diplomatic relations.
And, Bill, we're told endlessly that the idea here will be to facilitate greater dialogue between the United States and the Chinese, that the military simply needs to have more military-to-military talks, in other words. Do you see any prospect, based on your reporting and your study of what the Chinese are up to, that, in fact, this will do other than what it has to date, which has basically been a one-way street revealing our secrets, but keeping theirs very much in the dark?
That's exactly what's happening. There's been no sincere military exchange with the Chinese, and the reason is simple. The Chinese military is the most ideologically hardline communist element within that system, along with the party, and they view the United States as their main enemy. Any kind of exchanges are going to be for one-sided exploitation, that is gaining access to U.S. warfighting information and secrets, and they're not really interested in any kind of a sincere exchange. The U.S. side has a naive approach that this is a way to build trust, and we've seen that that hasn't worked in the past. When the EP3 incident back in 2001 took place, the U.S. military tried to call its contacts in the Chinese military, and the answer was crickets. There was silence. They were unable to reach any of them. And it's just naive to think that the Chinese military would operate out of school from the party and contact the U.S. military directly.
And this, I guess, is really where we're winding up now more and more, Bill Gertz, is that we're finding that there are things that are going on in China, including most especially the building of more nuclear and conventional capabilities, which seem to be consistently catching us by surprise. And at the same time, and this is something, again, you've been reporting on brilliantly, we're having American military leaders, particularly in the Pacific, downplay the significance of these developments. Talk a little bit about that and the kind of willful blindness that this exhibits.
The Obama administration in particular is a what I would call a threat-averse policy system. In other words, they don't want to highlight any threats. They don't want the American people to understand that there are serious threats out there that require a strong response or diplomatic, military, and intelligence responses. And this is the problem. They're basically, it's kind of a willful blindness when it comes to following what's going on in China. They have this notion that, well, if we just trade with the Chinese, that will solve all the problems. Unfortunately, it's not. And the Chinese military is in the middle of an aggressive strategic nuclear force buildup that includes an array of new missiles and missile submarines and anti-satellite weapons, cyber warfare capabilities, and yet the Obama administration is just totally ignoring that threat and playing it down to the detriment of U.S. national security.
Bill, you've talked a bit about in your reporting what is developing in terms of opposition to this willful blindness on the one hand and the cuts that it is translating into in terms of missile defenses, which are clearly more and more needed in light of what the Chinese are up to. Talk a little bit about what Mike Rogers of Alabama, the chairman of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee in the House Armed Services Committee, said on that subject recently.
Yes, Rogers gave a speech down at Huntsville at an annual Space and Missile Defense Symposium, and he basically said the Obama administration has cut $6 billion from missile defenses at a time when the threats from missiles, foreign missiles, is increasing, specifically Iran. And he laid out a fairly dire situation with our missile defense. He actually blamed the recent ground-based interceptor test failure on the fact that this was the first test in 5 years. He made the point, if you have a car sitting in the garage for 5 years, don't expect it to start up. And so he called for a major effort to try and bolster our missile defenses, modernize them, build a third interceptor site on the East Coast, and try and fix the system in time for these emerging threats, both from China and Iran.
Bill, finally, we have to let you go, but quickly, tell us about Ibrahim al-Asiri, a bomb maker of apparently some considerable capability. What is his status today?
He basically was a master bomb maker for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. According to a report from Yemen, he was targeted in a recent drone strike, and it appears that he was severely injured, although details of the attack have not been confirmed.
Will this, in fact, mark a turning point, do you think, in the threat that we're facing at the moment? Or is this just another day? Will his services be reproduced by others and the threat persist as it has in the past?
He's been training other al-Qaeda to make bombs, so that represents a serious threat. It would be a good thing if he were taken off the field, but it's not clear yet whether that's happened.
Whether it's happened or whether it will make a difference. Bill Gertz, I know we have to let you go. Thank you very much for the terrific job you do covering these issues for us at the Washington Free Beacon and Washington Times. Keep up the good work. Come back to us again very soon. Folks, let me just take another minute with you to talk about what I believe is the fundamental takeaway from Bill Gertz's reporting, which he's just shared with us, and what we talk about in these segments week upon week. And that is the extent to which the world, whether we like it or not, is in fact a dangerous place. We have been led to believe, especially by the Obama administration, but by some in the Republican Party as well, as though the sorts of challenges that we have confronted in the international arena in the years gone by are at an end. That as long as Bill Gertz put it, we engage in trade with various nations, as long as we tend to our knitting, as long as we maintain the budget discipline that will keep us from drowning in red ink, the world will take care of itself and our place in it will be assured. Nothing is further from the truth. And whether it's the Chinese nuclear weapons programs that Bill was talking about, whether it is the emergence worldwide of the Muslim Brotherhood as a threat to this country, whether it is simply the very, very concerted effort being made by Russia and the leftists of Latin America or the anti-Americans elsewhere in the world, we are going to face challenges and indeed threats. We ignore them at our extreme peril. We're determined not to do that here. I hope by listening, you're equipping yourself to do the same. We'll look forward to talking with you more about this in a moment. Next up, we'll be speaking with Fred Flights of Lignet.com. Get his take on the Egyptian developments and much more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people.
when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being basically every week, by our friend Fred Flights. He is a senior analyst with Langley Intelligence Group Network, also known as Lignet.com. Its site, Lignet.com, is a terrific resource for those tracking national security events here and abroad. He is also a career intelligence professional, having served for many years at the Central Intelligence Agency, also working for John Bolton as his chief of staff when Mr. Bolton was the Undersecretary of State for Arms Control, and also serving as a professional staff member on the House Intelligence Committee. Welcome back, Fred. It's always good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Frank.
I want to start with you, as I have several of our guests in this program, with the developments taking place as we speak in Egypt. A bloody crackdown, loss of life still uncertain. But what do you make of what's going on there, Fred? And what do you and your colleagues at Lignet think is likely to come next?
Well, we're trying to figure out how this might have been prevented. The Muslim Brotherhood is obviously a bad group, and the removal of them could set Egypt on a track for a better, more democratic government someday. It looks like that day is further away right now after the violence yesterday, which is going to make opposition groups less willing to work with the government. It could cause the Muslim Brotherhood to become an insurgency and maybe make the country degenerate into Assyria. But I think what we need to focus on is the weakness of U.S. policy and how the interim government believed it had a free hand to do this without any consequences. This verbal nonsense by the administration that they won't make a determination of whether this is a coup, obviously this is a coup, and the fact that they are sort of encouraging the regime not to crack down but not doing anything against them, I think that we've really given the wrong signals to the Egyptian government. And what I think is even more disturbing, there's a great piece right today by Bill Gertz in the Washington Free Beacon, where he talks about that the Egyptian military government may be thinking of aligning with the Russians and maybe the Chinese because the Obama administration has been pro-Morsi and pro-Muslim Brotherhood. I don't completely agree with that. I think what could happen is that the Egyptian government is going to decide they can't trust the United States to provide a reliable support. They know the Syrian government got reliable support from Moscow. And after this is all over, there may be a military regime in Egypt supported by the Russians.
Yeah. We spoke with Bill Gertz earlier in the program, but didn't get to that subject. So I'm glad to have you introduce it, Fred Flights. And this really is just one example of the kind of incompetence, really, that has brought us to this pass, incompetence on the part of the Obama administration. It played with this Egyptian sort of political tinderbox, like a kid, you know, with matches. It went after, as we've discussed previously in the program, supporting the Muslim Brotherhood, signaling its disaffection from Mubarak. It seemed to think as though if only the Brotherhood came to power, all would be well, and there'd be stability and a new, more democratic face. Nothing could have been farther from the truth, predictably. But I'm struck by what you've just said, Fred, and what Bill has written about, that our lack of dependability matters. And it matters not just in Egypt, but it matters in a lot of other parts of the world. Talk a little bit about that as you see it, particularly maybe turn to the Far East, where Japan, South Korea are almost certainly watching our behavior as well, as they're dealing at the moment with an increasingly assertive communist China, which Bill was talking about, is getting more and more nuclear threatening capabilities towards us as well as towards them.
I think that's another important lesson we can draw from this. What are other nations seeing in this? I have many friends in Japan. I talk to friends with Japanese think tanks, and they've been saying for years how they don't see the resolve from the Obama administration to defend Japan. And I think this is being seen in South Korea. It's being seen among our allies in the Middle East. It's being seen in Europe. And concerning Egypt, this administration has never had a consistent policy. The policy of Mubarak was inconsistent. They've been pro and against Morsi. They can't make their mind up on the coup. They can't use the word coup. This is simply going to cause nations to start fending for themselves and looking for new allies.
Well, I have to say, I'm less concerned about what they're signaling in terms of the coup and all of that than I am that they may, in fact, be still insisting that the Muslim Brotherhood be restored in some fashion to the political process, if not actually to power. And I think that'll be a disaster. Hey, Fred, let me turn to a different subject altogether, but one that I'm very pleased that Lignet has been tracking. And that is the report from General Shelton, the commander commander of Space Command, that the United States is risking its position in space, and with that, perhaps a great many of our equities. Talk a little bit about that and how serious that problem is, an extraterrestrial facet of the Obama administration's undermining of our security.
Well, General Shelton gave a speech on Capitol Hill recently explaining that there are some significant drawdowns being planned for satellites in space that could protect us against attacks from the Soviet Union, from Russia. And I think it is simply part of the Obama administration's general dislike of missile defense and any advanced military programs of this sort. And I think it's sort of a piece where there's things they want to spend money on, but in terms of the Pentagon and advanced systems like this, there's no interest by this administration.
Yeah. Well, in particular, I was struck by one aspect of his speech, as reported by you all, namely that he no longer thinks we need something called the Advanced Extremely High Frequency Satellite System, which has been envisioned as a modernization program to support presidential communications in a nuclear warfare environment. And this speaks to kind of the larger attitude of the Obama administration towards the whole nuclear portfolio, Fred Flights, doesn't it? It talks really about a kind of disarmament, unilateral, if necessary, in this part of the space. And I just wonder what you and your team at Langley Intelligence Group Network think of the contrast between such steps, disarming the United States in this regard, and what's going on in places like China, as we talked about, or Russia, for that matter, and beyond.
It's really very troubling. And Shelton also said that the space-based infrared system, a missile early warning satellite system, also may not survive. And I mean, after we saw the president calling for more unilateral nuclear cuts, which the Russians have ignored, as you and I have discussed, it simply shows a lack of long-term vision or an understanding of some of the significant threats that the Russian nuclear stockpile continues to mount. I mean, the Russians are not canceling programs like this, either in space or in warheads or missile delivery systems. The Obama administration, on the other hand, is delaying or trying to cancel programs like this. And after 8 years in office, they may do a lot of damage in setting back these programs that will take a subsequent administration many years to fix.
Well, and I think, frankly, that's the strategy, is to create conditions on the ground, as they say, that will be essentially irreversible. And I, again, Fred Flights, I'm just struck by the fact that such a dramatic contrast is taking place. Not only, as you say, are the Russians not canceling these programs, they seem to be redoubling their effort to acquire them, the Chinese as well. And I have to say that I'm really very concerned that what we're facing in this area, as in so many others, is the Obama doctrine. I think of it as, in nine words, undermining our friends, emboldening our allies, and diminishing our country. The subject that we're anxious to continue talking with you about, Fred Flights at Langley Intelligence Group Network. Keep up the good work at lignet.com. Come back to us again next week. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.